Silence.
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 186 of Nerd Pride Radio. 186, you want history or you want politics? Well, you know what? We'll do both of them. We'll start with politics. Did you know the 186th smallest congressional district by land size, because they're all supposed to be roughly about the same population. But the 186th smallest in the United States is Tennessee's 5th District, which actually covers Nashville. Jim Cooper, a Blue Dog Democrat. I don't know. That's all I know about him. He's a Blue Dog Democrat, and I don't even know for sure what that means. I think that means he's conservative, but a Democrat, I think. I don't know. Or how about the year 186 A.D., when the Hatepe eruption occurred in New Zealand, the largest eruption of a volcano in New Zealand in the last 20,000 years, it turned the sky red all around the world. Like, literally, we have historical accounts from that time from both Rome and China to confirm that it happened. You know what? I should have just gone with that one. That one was much cooler than the political one, wasn't it? Okay. Anyway, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Oh, there you go. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D / Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd. Plus, there's like 7 other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. Our sponsor this week, Miranda's Spear Cleaning Service. Need to spruce up your dull spear? Bring it to Miranda's and they'll put it through the wash.
Really?
No, not really. I make all these up. Every week I have either a sponsor or I have a co-host or I have something that Nerd Pride Radio smells like. I make all of them up. Oh my God, am I still recording? Oh God, I didn't mean to. Oh God, it's tragic, isn't it? I'm sorry guys. Okay. I didn't mean to break it to you like that, but yeah, I make
them
up.
Love your kids.
Right. Remember every week when I tell you how much I love my children? Yeah, it's all made up. Okay. So anyway, before I get to the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast, I actually have a bunch of stuff before that even. That's how much of a week this has been. So, first off, a little meta talk.
Oppenheimer!
Yeah, MetaTalk's just where I pull back the curtain a little bit, talk about the podcast, the website, stuff going on. For any of you who listened last week and you saw that I got the wrong bumper music in there, I played the fingertips music for a second time instead of putting in the Nerd Rage spiel. And if you heard that and you still have a copy of that version of the episode, yeah, I fixed it. So what you have is a classic now. It is a rare lost classic. So you should save that because it'll be worth money someday. I feel stupid every time I do something like that, but oh well, it's fixable. All right.
You feel stupid when you don't do it.
Yeah, you know what? I feel stupid most of the time. They're absolutely correct. But they can't hear you from over there. So now you're just annoying Kyle. All right. What's next? Oh, updates. All right. I can't stop following this. I have to check out the tabloids now. I hope you guys are doing the same thing. Check out the tabloid headlines every time you're in the supermarket. And if they feature Trump at all, man, just get that view into what the extremist Trump loyalists are thinking, because it's fascinating. This time, all right, last time it was going to be, last week, literally, it was going to be World War III. World War III and how Trump was gonna, he had a plan to crush our 8 enemies. Well, now instead, This week, Trump's plan for world peace. That's exactly right. His plan for world peace. How the Prez, and that's because, you know, they're close to him. They can just call him Prez. How the Prez and Kushner got America's greatest minds to solve this crisis. Ooh. Man, they got a lot of faith in this guy. So. Yeah, well, trying, but you know, this is just what the National Enquirer tells me when I'm at the supermarket. So, but that was just a quick update, and you know what? Follow along with the tabloids. It's fun. All right. Still, before I get to the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast, it's time for a little feedback. That's right. I say things on this podcast, and sometimes people have commentary. They give me feedback. Okay. Last week, my uncomfortable topic was a bit on misogyny and complimenting strangers while not appearing to be a creepy old man. And, in response to that, Well, that's what I was talking about last week. So in response to that, I got some commentary from Sarah Beth and from Nelly, who are both women and therefore probably have some insight onto this that I don't. So, from Sarah Beth, she gave, and I'm just going to summarize these because they both, had a lot to say and I only have a limited amount of time here. I mean, they were very, very thorough and I appreciate it. Thank you very much. But
or maybe
she
they
gave,
got angry at you.
She gave a, no, they're very nice. They've been very sweet.
I was just making a joke.
Yeah, Sarah Beth shaped up into a series of levels, depending on how well you know somebody, and here for her, what she would be, comfortable with as either the person giving the compliment or as the complimentee, or commenter or commentee, as she put it, it would be, first level, complete strangers. If you're a complete stranger, maybe if you're going to comment on something, then you would comment on something. And I like the way she categorized it, stuff that is, you know, within their power to control and is, of minimal effort potentially. So for example, I like your haircut. I like your hair color, or maybe, oh, that's a cool dress or great shoes or something like that. You know, hey, I love that necklace. Where'd you get it? Something like that. So if it's somebody that you don't know at all, then, you know, you comment on something that is not, you know, you're certainly not going to comment on their weight. You're not going to tell them how beautiful they are. You're not going to, I mean, you just comment on some item about them, something that, maybe would almost come off as more of an accessory, or a highlight than, you know, some integral part of themselves. This is, I'm supplementing her words there. But nothing serious. And then second tier, she put in casual acquaintances, friends, things like, wow, you look really good today. Or, wow, blue is really your color. I like that example. That's a good one. Things like this. But then she said, when it gets to third tier, this is people you know really well, close friends, close family. You know, this is where you can comment on more personal stuff. Like, you know, you know that they've been working out. You know, they've been trying to get into shape, and you can say, oh, wow, you told me you were doing this new workout and you look great. It's really showing. It's, you know, things like that. So, but it's all in levels. And that's kind of, I think, kind of where I was as well. I mean, something like that, except that even though I say that that's where I think I would be comfortable, I'm not actually in a position where I feel comfortable complimenting strangers. And in fact, for the most part, I mean, just like I say, even though I agree with what she's saying here, and I think that's how it should be, because it would be nice if you could compliment a stranger and, you know, just say something nice. Again, not about anything really personal or big or anything like that, but, you know, to comment on, wow, yeah, I really like that outfit, something like that. You know, it would be nice, but I don't compliment strangers. Even with close acquaintances, not close acquaintances, but like work acquaintances. I mean, people I know by name and I've had conversations with, but I wouldn't say we're close, but you know, we're acquaintances. Even them, very rarely do I say something. It would have to be something that really stands out to me. And I wouldn't do anything that was too personal with that. But then yeah, close friends, close family, then you know where the limits are. And that's a more personal thing. And Sarah Beth also did finish out by saying that never acceptable. Anything that starts with the line, wow, you'd look great if, or, you know, you'd look better if, yeah, don't ever do that. Never, because that's not even really a compliment. Seriously. I mean, that's you telling them what they should do, how they should live their life, how they should present themselves to, no, that's just an insult. That's saying, well, you don't look great now, but you know what would make you look good? Yeah, that's just terrible. Or commenting on things that they can't change or can't change easily. And that includes weight, even though I know, you know, with workouts, with diets, you can change body shape, but that's not I wouldn't put that in as a category of something that they can change. That is stuff that is really difficult. I mean, for some, I wouldn't go there. Just wouldn't. So, that's that. But now let me get into Nelly, because Nelly was, an even longer exchange. And I'm going to summarize here because she included some personal details that even though, you know, she put this in a letter to Nerd Pride and I'm sure she wouldn't mind me sharing, I'm not comfortable sharing some details. So, but I've highlighted some stuff here and I'll actually read directly. Nelly says, appearances are super tricky and the topic is frankly terrifying. Women are so conditioned to hate themselves and desire something that they can't attain. It's almost painful because there's almost no way out of this thinking once you're in it. And most women are. Okay, and I'm breaking away from what she's saying here. I agree. I agree that the societal pressure we put on women to appear a certain way is very ingrained, and even the most enlightened women have a really tough time breaking that cycle and not reacting instinctively to social cues about appearances in a specific way. It's really tough. As a guy, I grew up in a society, in a structure that encouraged me at every turn to immediately judge women based on their appearance. And I don't mean that in any kind of figurative sense. I mean, I can remember in high school and college, I can remember me and my friends sitting and just watching girls pass by. As people would pass by, every girl that passed by, we'd call out a number. I mean, not out to their faces, but, you know, me and a friend would be sitting there going, ooh, 7, ooh, 7, 8, oh, that's a nice, oh, 4, 4. I mean, that's how we would judge people. Like, just a random group of people walking by. And I look back on that and I'm like, that is hideous. That is terrible. That was our mindset, that that was entertainment, is to sit there and judge them like we're looking at the website hot or not and picking, you know, it's just gross. It feels bad.
Can
it feels
I
bad
you?
To think about it now. No, you can't because, look, hey, you know, you should ask me about the racism and the sexism and the homophobia we had when we were alive in the 80s, because it was pretty bad then too. And we thought we were enlightened people back then, but we weren't. We were terrible people. So you know what? Here's the thing, Eli, you right now live in a much more enlightened age, and I'm glad that you have a better understanding of how the world works and what's fair and right and just. And I'm going to tell you for sure that 20 years from now, when you have your own kids, you are going to be looking back at this age going, wow, there was still so much I didn't know.
Unless Trump's still
president. Oh, we were so stupid. I guess Trump could still be president if he lives to be 90 and if he sets himself up as absolute dictator. That could happen. So anyway, back to where I was with Nelly. Let's go back to her words. So she's talking about the mindset of women, in this cultural construct that forces them to think that their appearance is what makes them valid. And, so she says, so when someone compliments appearance, it sends a message that, this extra effort I put in is good. It makes me a valid human being, or this weight I lost makes me better. And that's not the case. Everyone's an equally valuable person, regardless of the amount of time that they put into their makeup, their hair, working out. All right. I agree with her. So then let's go through this. And okay. So she talks about then, when someone comes up to me and says, you look great. Have you lost weight? She says, for her, that's so triggering. I immediately remember that I think I look better thin. I want to be thin. I'm a valid human being when I'm thin. And it triggers a destructive behavioral pattern, that, oh yeah, you know what? I wouldn't even have thought of that. I mean, again, that's not, you know, I'm a big fat guy. I talk about that. I am definitely overweight. I could stand to lose about 80 pounds. Absolutely. But for me, it's not pathological. I mean, you know, right now I'd like to work out and I'd like to lose some weight because I'd like to be healthier. My heart is healthier. I have more energy when I'm lighter than this, but it's not pathological, or at least not as pathological as it is for persons who suffer from true eating disorders and true body dysmorphia. And so is dysmorphia the right way? Right word? I can't even say the word. Never mind. Doesn't matter. Let me go down further in Nelly's. Is my advice is, stranger or not, try to come up with something else to compliment, so not their appearance. She said, there's a long history of women's only purpose was to be there for the consumption of men. Women have been told how to dress, how to behave, how to talk, smile, eat, how much they should weigh, how they should wear their hair forever. And she makes comparisons to how Hillary Clinton was treated, how female politicians and celebrities are treated. That commentary is always on their appearance, their dress, their hair, their weight, in a way that male counterparts are never treated the same way, because society expects different things from them, and it's not fair. So again, quoting Nelly, so find something else. We are always being looked at, good or bad. Let women dress and decide things for themselves. Don't influence them. I really only listen to these compliments when it's a friend, a close one, because from anyone else, I first think, you stopped me to tell me that? And then I think, I didn't do it for you. Which, yeah, this is the part I'm afraid of, and this is why I keep my mouth shut, is because I don't want to come off as creepy. She says, you know, you're worried about being creepy. She said, you know, at worst, no, that you're not going to come off as creepy. You just come off as annoying. And to me, it's like, well, God, that's almost as bad. I mean, if I'm going to stop and give someone a compliment like that, well, I guess part of it is that selfish thought of, huh, I just made their day. Ha ha. Which is, yes, I get a glow from being nice to people and helping people, but also I got to remember that while I'm seeking that feedback and that, oh, I'm such a good guy, aren't I? It's potential that I am, you know, for the wrong person, I'm triggering something. And yeah, clearly the difference between Sarah Beth's letter and Nellie's indicates that it's not the same for every person. It's not the same. And so maybe my guideline is, well, if I don't know the person, then maybe I shouldn't jump to any conclusions about what is going to help them or what is going to, you know, if I know them a little, or if I know them really well, then I can start making a judgment on whether this would be appropriate. But if I don't know them, and Nelly does offer a caveat to that. She says, you know, for example, when she's at work, they're supposed to wear pins on their uniform that represent their different fandoms within the nerd community. And so therefore, if someone, you know, if a customer asks her about one of the pins, starts talking to her about, you know, whatever subject matter that is, that's appropriate. That's what it's there for. And also, she says it's different because at work, you know, when she's at work in uniform, the power dynamic is different than when she's, you know, a short, small female on her own somewhere and she's accosted by, some much larger male who wants to approach her, talk to her, and the conversation tends to often turn creepy. That's a very different power dynamic. And so I completely see that. I get it. I don't know if I've gotten anything, that's going to change how I behave out of this. But I appreciate the insight. And again, I still, no more than last week, I still don't know. But I appreciate that. And, it gives me a lot more to process. Also in, sorry, I didn't mean to yell in your ear. Nelly recommends listening to a podcast called Friendshipping, which is, Jen and Trin from Cards Against Humanity. And they put out an awesome podcast called Friendshipping. I have listened to it. It's not one of my regular ones, but I listen every now and then. It's kind of a filler for me, in between other stuff. And, in Friendshipping, they talk about friendship stuff and relationships and how to deal with people in general. And she recommends specifically their episode called Bean Mush, which is about 6 or 7 episodes back. And there's a whole section in there, on how to compliment people. And it's not exactly what we're talking about here, but it's along the same veins. And so I went back and re-listened to that. And that was really cool. if you choose to listen to them, listen to the latest episode, or if you're listening to this later and it's no longer the latest episode, it's the one called Friendship Awakens, where they talk about Star Wars 7 completely in terms of the friendships between the characters, and it's joyous. It is gorgeous and joyous and wonderful. It is so much fun, I can't even tell you. You have to go listen to it. So if you want to try out Friendshipping as a podcast, man, that is the episode to start with. Get on that one. That is cool. Oh, look at that. 20 minutes in, and now it's time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast, which, by the way, I've got like 7 segments coming up. I got a lot of stuff. This is crazy. We may only have time for one Podomatic this week. But the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast, this is the time for me, when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list, and the very best stuff off of that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. So straight into it. First up, it's my gaming table.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
All right, I've just got one thing, and it's not big. Well, all right, I got a few things, but most of them I don't even really need to talk about much. Eli's birthday is coming up, and for his birthday, he said all he wants, because, you know, we were like, do you want to have a pizza party? Do you want to go to a movie with a bunch of friends? Do you want to? He's like, no, all I want is for you and me and my brothers to sit down and start up our new game of Pathfinder, get those characters in there, and go. And I want a marathon session. I want to go all day long. I'm like, all right, cool. Then that's what we're doing. Happy birthday to you. Hell, happy birthday to me. That's going to be a great day. So I'm looking forward to that one. And that'll be just Eli, Noah, and Aiden playing in that one. Although, if their brother Jacob is home, maybe we'll whip him up a player or a character that can...
No.
Oh, no. Something that can fit in as a side character. Something that would be cool for you guys to have around even after Jacob's gone. Because we can't wait around for him to actually play games. But maybe he could sit in for just one episode. Eli says no. He doesn't love his brothers, apparently. What a crab. Okay, anyway. We played Pathfinder just this week. With the main group, with my character Dothan, and there's nothing to say about it except, oh dude, it's so kicking ass. So kicking ass. We had so much fun. It was so cool. So, we're headed back, I think, soon. We got some negotiating to do, but the important part is, we're rich, we have a lot of money again, and, oh man, those wings are gonna get done. I'm telling you, those wings are gonna get done. It's gonna be awesome. Alright, but, that's not the important part. Actually, I was just flipping through stuff. I can't remember what I was looking for, but somehow I came across my setting, my campaign role-playing game setting for Legacy of Justice. And a lot of you were there when I was developing this. In fact, this was kind of a group project that I came up with the setting, and then a bunch of people contributed scenes to it, characters, towns, elements, creatures, and people just kicked in a whole bunch of stuff, and it's really cool. And so I wanted to break it back out because, well, I want to do something with it. It's really awesome. And as I'm reading through it, I mean, I am so in love with this setting. Here's the deal. Legacy of Justice was my brother Kyle. It was one of those times, and he does this all the time. In fact, you've seen it on the Podomatic when he says, okay, here's an idea that anybody can steal. He's an idea guy. And he has great ideas. And he came to me one time and said, here's the idea. 3 words. Post-apocalyptic superheroes. And then he said, maybe that's 2 words. Is post-apocalyptic 2 words? I don't know. All right. So anyway, he said, post-apocalyptic superheroes. He said, I don't know what it means. I don't know what it would look like, but that's what I want. And so I sat down with it, and I came up with Legacy of Justice. And the idea is, imagine the Silver Age of comics, imagine the 1950s and 60s, and going into the 70s even, that age of comic books, those superheroes. Now, imagine that in this world, one of the supervillains actually sets off his doomsday device. All right, it's Dr. Apocalypse. He's the... In fact, I've got this whole story written up for it where Major Justice is the world's greatest superhero. Major Justice is kind of this Superman, Captain America rolled together. And Major Justice is battling his arch nemesis, Dr. Apocalypse, and Dr. Apocalypse is holding the President of the United States hostage with one of his doomsday devices, and Major Justice winds up rushing in to save the President, and ultimately, through his own actions, accidentally sets off the doomsday device, and it breaks open a rift between dimensions, and Flux pours into our world, and Flux is Aiden says I need a better name for it, but Flux is my general all-purpose mystery energy from Limbo that I've used in multiple different worlds and campaigns, and we wind up with a post-apocalyptic landscape that we can do anything with. And so now, you know, modern day, you know, here it is, 50 years later, 50 years after the apocalypse, what does the landscape look like? And you've got, you had superheroes already, but now you've got superheroes and mutants and, your typical post-apocalyptic gamma world kind of stuff, but you've also got, you know, in lots of places, the superpowered beings acting as local warlords. I have a whole write-up of Graceland. Graceland is my favorite place in the entire setting. Graceland is awesome because in the real world, in our world, Elvis wanted to be a cop. Elvis wanted to be a secret agent. Elvis wanted to be part of the FBI. Elvis wanted to be a kung fu master. Those are all real things that he wanted to be. This is just who Elvis was. So, in a world where superheroes are real, Elvis wanted to be a superhero. And eventually, he had enough money to buy himself some mystic artifact, a cape that turned him into a speedster, some kind of silver streak bullet thing, and he became an actual, honest-to-God superhero. Elvis. All right. And then the apocalypse happens and now Elvis gathers his people together and he starts a little compound at Graceland and there's a whole history that goes with it and it's super cool. Anyway, I love this whole setting, this legacy of justice where we've got towns and fiefdoms. And again, most places either have some sort of bizarre flux powered technology or they have superheroes or supervillains, superpowered beings defending them. Again, these little warlords, these little competing factions all across the landscape, and I'm just in love with this setting. So, having reread it and then talked about it with Aiden, and he's like, wait, and you came up with this when? And I'm like, I don't know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago? I don't remember. And you've done what with it? Nothing? How can you do nothing with it? So, I think maybe after my current game of Paranoia, which is going really well, by the way. After my current game of Paranoia, maybe I will break out Legacy of Justice and maybe we'll play an email campaign of it, or maybe we'll find some time to do some Roll20 or some combination of different stuff to play it out, because I think it'd be a great story to write. I don't have a system with it. I intended to play it with Mutants and Masterminds, but I don't really care what game system I use for it. I just want to write stories with it. And I would like them to be collaborative stories with the people I love gaming with, so I think we could work that out. Man. All right. Anyway, I was just inspired. So there you go. That's that one. That's it for the gaming table. Next up, Science Corner.
Oh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
And that music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something. Okay. Do you know why there aren't any great white sharks in captivity? Oh, did you know? Did you know that there aren't any great white sharks in captivity? Really? You didn't know that? Well, there aren't. Do you know why? This was fascinating to me, because people had captured great white sharks quite often, and it turns out that when you capture a great white shark and then you put it into a display case or an aquarium or whatever, you know, you got your big-ass aquarium that you think is going to be perfect for a great white shark, and great white sharks simply will not eat when they're in captivity. I mean, first you've got the whole problem of their gills. The great white sharks, as most people know, they have to be on the move constantly. They don't have pumps to pump water over their gills. Therefore, they have to be swimming all the time. And if they're not swimming, they suffocate and die. So when you capture your great white shark and you want to transport it somewhere, well, you have to be transporting it in a container big enough for it to swim around in, or it will suffocate. Or, alternately, the way they do it nowadays, if they were to transport a great white shark, is they transport in a special tank where they sedate the shark, they have it immobilized, and then the tank has a constant flow of water that goes through the tank in the proper direction at all times. So the water is constantly circulating, so it's constantly getting new water pumped over its gills, which is just crazy. All right. But even if you manage to get it into a tank in captivity, they don't eat, and they just slowly starve to death. So every great white shark in captivity, they finally figured out, was simply in the process of dying from the moment they captured it, and some of them just live longer than others. You know, so for some of them, you know, they'd only live 3 or 4 days. Some of them made it like 2.5 weeks, but eventually they all die. But then eventually someone, and that would be the someone would be Monterey Bay Aquarium in California, finally captured one. And it was a smaller one, so that made it easier. You didn't have to have quite as big a tank if you've got a smaller one. They had a younger one, and they transported it in a special circulating tank, and they got it back to the aquarium. And this shark lived in with them for about 6 months, and it fed properly because they had a huge tank. All right, they had an absolutely gigantic, enormous tank. And the thing managed to live for about 6 months, and then I can't remember if it was, you know, no matter how much they fed it, it was still eating the other things in the tank. I mean, you can't have a gigantic-ass aquarium like that for just one shark. And so ultimately they let it go. But over the years, I think they wound up with like 6, 7, 8 different great whites that they captured in this same manner. And some of them, you know, they all stayed for various amounts of time. Don't know if any of them actually died while they were in captivity. But at the first sign of trouble, then they'd take them back out and they'd release them, which is, you know, a shame for them. This is all in the '70s. It's a shame for them because after the movie Jaws and interest around sharks, I mean, you know, American society loves sharks. We have a whole shark week, you know, we're like that. And so having a shark in your tank, in your aquarium, that's big money. That draws people in. It's a moneymaker. So, they kept trying, and, ultimately with the last shark that they kept, what they found out with it is that it was bruising itself on the sides of the tank. It would just keep running into the sides of the tank, and so it was leaving scrapes and marks and bruises, and so they realized what was going on. They take it back out and they release it. And, I think that one, they had a tracker on it, ultimately just died anyway. So it never did survive. But the thing that I thought was fascinating about it is, I mean, everything about the great white shark is just, it is built to be an open ocean animal and you simply cannot contain it. You just can't. And I find that really fascinating because it's okay. It has to be swimming constantly. Well, they found a way to overcome that. It needs huge spaces. Okay, well, we've got that. We give it a huge enough space that it'll actually feed and it'll start living its life. But you know what? They couldn't make it huge enough because sharks normally live in the open ocean, like literally open ocean, which means that if you put a tracker on a great white and you just watch where it goes, map it out. And they showed the article I was reading showed some sample maps that they'll go for 200 miles in a straight line. They just swim in a straight line nonstop for 200 miles, and then suddenly they make a 135-degree turn, and now they're going off in a different direction. And they'll go 50 miles that way, and then they turn again. It's just, there's no rhyme or reason to it. They just swim hundreds of miles in a straight line, and then decide to change. I mean, it's like, it's almost as if, you know, hey, I've just had a big feeding and now I have to swim to survive. I'm just going to keep swimming in a straight line until I decide I'm hungry or until something catches my eye. And then they just go. Who knows why they're doing it? But what it means is that you put them in any size aquarium tank, any size at all. You can't be big enough. You can't be miles across. And they're going to wind up in your tank swimming in a straight line until, oh, crap, there's a glass wall. Clunk. And, oh, by the way, since it's an aquarium where people come to see fish for money, that means it's got to be glass. So it can't even be, you know, a nice obvious barrier. No, it's got to be clear glass so people can look in. It's just that much more likely that they're going to bump their shit into it over and over and over until they die. God, that's tragic. And so the whole thing is just, there's something about it. The great white shark is simply meant to be out in the ocean. and you try and change that, you're going to kill it. That's just how it runs. I mean, like I said, the best they could get, 6 months. 6 months is the longest they've ever had a great white in captivity, because they weren't meant to be in captivity. I find that really cool. All right. That's it for the science corner. Next up, oh God, it's my unnamed history segment.
Don't know much about history.
You know, I almost put this down as comic tithing, because it's about comics, but it's about the history of comics. So I decided, let's go unnamed history segment. I like the music better. Okay, this is one that my son Jacob sent to me. The original candidate for, and if, by the way, if you've heard this one before, if you know what I'm getting at here, don't tell the others because I want them to be surprised. So, the original candidate for DC Comics' first headlining black superhero. So their first black superhero who was going to have his own comic, it was Black Lightning. But, and then, by the way, this is how I find out, is Jacob just sends me a text and he says, hey, if you've got time, go to the Wikipedia entry for Black Lightning and just read the publication history. Just the first few lines. And so I did. And in Wikipedia, this is where I found it. And so then I did some research and I found some other articles on the topic. And it wound up being Black Lightning, but the original character that they were going to use, and they had, two scripts already written, so they had the first couple of comics already lined up. They were ready to go with this one, was a character called the Black Bomber. And now the Black Bomber, which, by the way, kills me that in the 70s, half the black superheroes had to have black in their name so you'd know. The Black Bomber was, oh man, I love this. He was a white racist who would turn into a black superhero when he was under stress. So, literally, he's a white dude who only gets his superpowers when he becomes a black man. Now, how in the hell is this even justified as a hero? Okay, this was, supposedly, he was a white dude who was a Vietnam veteran, and while he was in Vietnam, the U.S. government started testing an Agent Orange-like chemical, that's how it was described, an Agent Orange-like chemical that would help make white soldiers, they would turn them Asian, essentially. We wanted them to look like the Vietnamese, we wanted them to look like the Vietnamese, so that they could blend in and could act as spies, rather than, hiring the South Vietnamese people that we already had. No, we needed American soldiers to do it. So anyway, it was a race-changing gas, and it didn't work ultimately, but it did leave this guy with the ability to turn into a black dude with superpowers. And, it just keeps going. The white guy had no idea about his black life, and vice versa. When he turns into a black superhero, the black superhero also has absolutely no clue that he's really a white guy. No idea. And they each have their own racially matched girlfriend, and the two girlfriends both know what's going on. And yet somehow they're not telling the different versions of this guy what's happening to him. And this was later described by comics historian Dan Markstein, I'm getting this right out of Wikipedia, as an insult to practically everybody with any point of view at all. Yeah, absolutely. This is just the most terrible thing ever. And yet, man, they had the script written, like they were ready to do it, like their first black superhero. Okay, he can be black, but could he be a white guy? I mean, we want people to be able to relate to him, so could he be a white guy? It's stunning, isn't it? It's not the best. Okay. And they did later do an homage to this stupid idea with a character called the Brown Bomber, who only showed up in one episode of something. And the Brown Bomber was essentially the same concept, and there's a comics page. Go look up the Brown Bomber. You can see the one page of comic that keeps getting shared around. The Brown Bomber wound up being a pudgy-looking white guy who then transforms into a pudgy-looking black guy who has superpowers. And in this particular case, he has a girlfriend who is black, and he is fully aware of his transformation. He knows what he is. I mean, this is just his superhero identity. I mean, he's not, there's no multiple personalities going on. And in this comics page, there is a, at the bottom of the page, there's one panel that has no dialogue because the dialogue's been blanked out. But there was originally dialogue there because what happens is he transforms into his black superhero self, and then he turns to his black girlfriend and says, and I believe they used the actual word, he says, so, am I allowed to use the N-word when I'm in this form? And then in the final panel, she says, no, absolutely not. All right. That's, boy, boy, even the joking homage to the most racist idea ever, still turns out to be really uncomfortably racist. So, now, this did cause me to look up, and this was, he's listed as, Black Lightning is listed as DC Comics' first headlining black superhero. And I'm like, okay, DC Comics. They put on that qualifier. They didn't say the first. So who was the first? And it actually was Luke Cage. Luke Cage was 1972. I love that. And I've read all the early Luke Cage, thanks to my friend Joel, who gave me a compendium of all the Luke Cages. And yeah, they're kind of racist, but you know, it's still Luke Cage and the TV show is awesome and all that. And so Black Lightning, that was almost the Black Bomber. Black Lightning didn't come around until 5 years later, 1977. So there you go. Now, who was the first black superhero ever? All right, this is because Luke Cage was obviously the first one to have his own comic. First black superhero ever, Black Panther. So 1963 was Black Panther, again, Marvel Comics, followed up by Captain America's Buddy Falcon, also in the 60s, and then Luke Cage in 72. DC Comics apparently has just been way behind Marvel, or at least back then, DC Comics was always way behind Marvel. They didn't get their first black character until many years after Marvel did. They didn't get their first black hero with his own comic until years after Marvel did. That's just how it worked out. So there you go. Anyway, that one's done. Oh man. You know what's next? Uncomfortable topics. Okay. This one is hard. This one is really hard. I'm at work and a lady from down the hall who, she goes to my church. I know her from other stuff. I work with her and she's very nice and she's a very pleasant woman and we get along well at work. But I also happen to know that she's very conservative, which, you know, it, again, I live in Northeast Nebraska and I am surrounded by Trump voters because that's just, it's a very red state. Okay. So this is not something that I'm surprised by. She's definitely all gung-ho Trump and she's very conservative and that's fine. That's, you know, a lot of people around me are like that. No big deal. So I'm in a conversation with her and we start talking about, I don't remember, the governor cutting budget stuff or the, I can't remember. It was some political topic and I think it was on the national level and whatever it was. We were kind of on the same page with whatever this particular topic was. Oh, maybe it was with education funding, something like that. And then she said something about making sure that we cut all the funding for Planned Parenthood. Now, she brought it up, all right? Well, this is not on me. She brought it up. And so I said, really, what do you think Planned Parenthood does? And she says that, well, again, these are her words. All they do is provide abortions. That's all they do. So therefore, the government needs to stop funding them. To which I say, the government doesn't fund any abortions. In fact, it's written into our laws that the government cannot provide money for abortions. And in fact, the government doesn't fund Planned Parenthood. Well, then what have they been talking about in all these budget discussions? Well, they don't fund Planned Parenthood in any sense. There is no, if you go look at the United States government budget, nowhere in our government budget, anywhere, is a line item that says, hey, here's all the money we're giving to Planned Parenthood, and then the president can just strike out Planned Parenthood. That doesn't happen. I said, no, Planned Parenthood is a medical clinic, like any other medical clinic or hospital or doctor. They are a medical clinic that provides medical services. Now, specifically, they provide reproductive health services for women, for the most part, but that's their focus, but they provide medical services. And when we talk about government funding, what we mean is if they do a pap smear or STD screenings or pregnancy tests or whatever it is that they do, any medical treatment that anyone else would get reimbursed for, they can submit that to Medicaid if that's the person's insurance, just like anybody else, and they would get reimbursed for those services just like anybody else. Well, but what about the abortion? Okay, well, I said they do provide abortions, and the government does not pay for those. The government will not reimburse for those because that's not a reimbursable item under Medicaid. You simply can't. So therefore, it doesn't happen. I said, there's lots of hospitals in the world, in this country. There are hospitals that will provide abortions, and they don't get reimbursed for those through Medicaid, but they do get reimbursed for all the other wonderful hospital services that they provide. I mean, do you want to shut them down? Do we need to take funding away from all of the hospitals? All right, so we go through this whole thing, and I'm explaining it as best I can, and she says, well, that's not true. What do you mean that's not true? They don't provide any other services. I'm like, seriously? That's really what you believe? Have you not read Abby Johnson's book? And some of you who have followed it more closely, I mean, the name was familiar. I knew who she was talking about at the time, but it's a person who used to be high up in Planned Parenthood. And then after she left the organization, she wrote some book explaining all the terrible, horrible things that Planned Parenthood does and how Planned Parenthood is nothing but an abortion factory and how they submit false claims to the government to make money off of services they've never provided, and et cetera, et cetera. So based on what she knows about Abby Johnson's book, she says, well, Abby Johnson says they don't provide any of those services. They don't do any of them. It's all a lie. I'm like, how can it be a lie? I know people. God, especially when I was in college, I knew lots of people who relied on Planned Parenthood as their primary, source of care for that sort of needs. I know lots of people. I know girls who went there to get birth control. I knew people who went there for testing and other services. How can you possibly think that? She says, well, they don't. I'm like, oh my God. And this is the point where I realize, and this is why I'm really bringing it up. This is not a conversation about Planned Parenthood and abortion, even though it sounds like it so far. This was the idea that in this particular conversation, she and I were in exactly the same position. She sounded like a crazy person to me. All right. She sounded like an absolute crazy person because she's spouting lies that are easily disprovable, right? You would just think all you have to do is do any basic research, check any reliable resource, check any, and it's all right there. And so to me, she sounds like a crazy person, and that she has been brainwashed by the propaganda on the other side, and that, all right, and yet from her point of view, she feels exactly the same way about me. Exactly the same way. That I only believe the things I do because I've been brainwashed by the leftist ideology of that, because for her, she watches Fox News. She has conservative news sources that fill up her Facebook feed. She has, and so to her, all of the news tells her that these kinds of viewpoints are correct. And it's not just about Planned Parenthood and abortion. That just happens to be the topic we were on. But everything that I know is an easily disprovable lie, to her, she buys into it because that's what she gets in her news. And it's not, I mean, to her, she has gotten these from reliable news sources. And it's every news source that she sees. All of them say the same thing. And all the people she's around, all the people in her life, her family and friends, everyone close to her, all feel exactly the same way. Therefore, I'm the one who's crazy. And it just, how do you fight against that? How do you make any headway? It shouldn't even be a fight. It should be, how do you educate in this situation? And I had no clue until she gave me the answer. She said, because again, she is so confident in her position, so absolutely assured of how right she is, that she says to me, well, you have a wife. Why don't you call Planned Parenthood and see if you can schedule an appointment for her? Go ahead. Ask them if they provide those services. Go on. Ask them. I'm like, holy crap. I will. That is a great idea. Thank you. I will do that. And now I wasn't going to do it there at work because, you know, here we spent 5 minutes doing this while I'm helping her set up I was trying to put up a display thing for a presentation she was doing. And so, you know, we had 5 minutes of talk, honestly. I've dragged it out even longer than that here describing it, but it was like 5 minutes of talk while I was getting things set up. And now I'm at work. So I can't make the call right there. God, if I could have, I would have pulled out my phone and dialed him up and we would have had the conversation right there together. But I waited until I got home for lunch and I looked up and sure enough, there's a Planned Parenthood in Omaha. That would be the closest one to me. And so I called down there and I said, look, this is not going to be any surprise to you guys. You guys all understand exactly how this conversation goes. This is not, all right, but just to verify here, I called up and I said, hey, my daughter goes to school down there and, you know, she needs to have her yearly checkup and get her birth control renewed and that kind of stuff. Is that something you guys can take care of? And the woman behind the desk, I assume she had a desk. I couldn't see her. She was very nice. And she says, yes, absolutely. We certainly can do that. And, you know, so then I said, well, hold on. You know, we've got Blue Cross Blue Shield. Is that, you know, do you guys take regular insurance? I don't know how Planned Parenthood even works. And she's like, oh yeah, we take all sorts of insurance. That's not a problem at all. And so I said my daughter would just give them a call, later in the week and she would schedule something for herself. And thank you very much for your time. Awesome. All right. And that was it. Obviously that, you know, if I want to schedule a yearly checkup, if I want to schedule for birth control or pregnancy tests, they offer all sorts of services. I then also, to double check all this, I found out I could have just gone online. I could just go online and schedule an appointment online. And here's a list of all the services they provide. And here's, you know, yes, frequently asked questions. There was the insurance question that no, it's not just, you know, for the poor and indigent and Medicaid and all this. It's, if you've got pretty much any insurance, they take most everything. No big deal. And all the information is right there. Well, I couldn't wait to next time I saw this woman at work, I went down there. I went to her office on break and I'm like, hey, you're not going to believe what I did. I called Planned Parenthood. That was a great idea. And I described to her exactly the conversation I just described to you. And you could see I stunned her. I absolutely stunned her because there was no way that Planned Parenthood actually provided those services. There's no way. And it floored her. And so immediately her first response, and this was so disheartening. Her first response is, oh, I can't believe you caught me at work on this. I'm not prepared for this. I have nothing to fight with. I'm like, it's not about a fight. We shouldn't be fighting. This shouldn't be a win or lose thing. This is a what is the truth and what does that mean for us? And so we have, a further conversation about it. And, you know, there was a lot of productive talk there. A lot of productive talk. And, you know, to her, I'm like, look, but it's not about abortion. It's not about it, because I said, yes, you know what? There are some people who are for abortion and there are some people who are against abortion and think it's murder. I said, you put all those people in a room together and 98% of them all agree on one thing. And she's obviously baffled. I say, the one thing they agree on is that the world would be a better place if less people needed abortions in the first place. Oh, yeah. Okay. I get that. Cause yeah, even people who are for abortion and believe it should be legal and available on demand, even those people would agree that, you know, it would be way better if we used birth control of some sort or some sort of family planning so that we didn't need an abortion in the first place. Wouldn't that be awesome? And so I'm like, you know, it's not about fighting about whether or not we should make it illegal or whether we should have, it's not about that. It's about, God, we should have universal high, top quality sex education in this country so that people are aware of their options and know how everything works and what they can do to make themselves safe and healthy. And then the government needs to provide free birth control to everybody who wants it. You want birth control? It's yours. It's free. Done. And then yes, there'd still be people with unwanted pregnancies. Things would still happen, but the rate would drop just as the rate has dropped for how many decades because our education and our technology and our availability of birth control just keeps getting better and better. And so the need for abortion drops. That's the best way to handle this. And she saw the point, but she doesn't like birth control either. So no, I'm like, okay, look. All right. Anyway, I don't want to get into the whole the whole discussion about that, because I'm veering too much into that part of it. The thing that made me most uncomfortable is when I got done, when we had this whole conversation and she could see my point, even if she certainly didn't agree with me. I mean, it was like, yeah, but how could you ever, you know, vote for anybody who supports abortion? How could you? And I'm like, it's not about that. I said, you know, I don't like abortion, but here's my problem is I don't like abortion, but I also don't like the death penalty. And she goes, yeah, no, I agree with that. The death penalty is absolutely wrong. I said, yeah, the worst thing about the death penalty is that you can't take it back. I said, how many, you know, of all the people we execute in this country, you know, 2-4% of them are innocent. She says, yeah, I know, absolutely. It's wrong. And I said, okay, well, every time you vote for somebody who's going to promise to take away abortion, you're voting for someone who is promising to increase our use of the death penalty. You know, I mean, you know, both of them involve the murder of innocent life. How do you support, you know, you gotta pick and choose. You gotta choose your evils here. And that sunk in. Suddenly it's like, oh yeah, I guess every time I'm voting for the anti-abortion candidate, I'm voting to kill more people with the death penalty. And you could see it sink in with her. And it was an interesting turning point. And yet even with that insight, she still finished the conversation with, oh God, now you've got me all fired up. I want to go home and do some research. I'm going to get to, she wanted to go prep herself so she could find ways to prove me wrong. I'm like, but it's not about that. It's about taking in all the facts, think about them, and don't go searching for ways that will allow you to stick with what you've always believed. Go search for meaning in what you've just found out. Take all the facts you've got and figure out what that means to you and make, oh, why is that so tough? Why are we wired this way? I don't get it. It's hard for me. It's really hard for me. And she even had a point where she was like, she wanted to call Planned Parenthood herself, and she was going to try and figure out some way to test them there, because she's like, okay, yeah, maybe they will schedule me for those appointments. But if I came in and they thought I was pregnant, I bet they'd try and steer me into an abortion. I bet they'd be trying to talk me into one right away. I bet they'd, and I'm like, it's not about that. Why are you? Oh my God. She's still, oh, okay. So they do take these appointments. But you know, they're still evil because they're still as if the agenda is to churn out as many abortions as possible. It's like, oh, how do you argue with that? I tried, and I made some headway, but it was like the end of a horror movie where I got to the end of it, and I felt like, oh, okay, good, we have some common ground, and you know, I'm not really going to sway her, but she saw my point. I saw the lights go on for a little bit, and then, just as the credits start to roll, her eyes go dead, and you can see the killers coming back, and oh, it's not over yet. Chucky's still here. Oh, damn it. Okay. Well, yeah, I tried. So that was my experience in uncomfortable topics this week. So let's see. What do I got next? Oh, God, there's so much. Science fiction double feature. Science fiction double feature. That's right. Here at Nerd Pride Radio, you get not one, but two, kind of one and a half-ish. All right, it's a movie and then some movie trailers. All right, but still, you get more than just one movie review for the same low, low price. All right. We went to see Guardians of the Galaxy 2 and kicked ass. Loved it. It was awesome. Not perfect. It did, a couple things that disappointed me about it, was, all right, the beginning of the movie, the first about third of the movie is really silly. It's mostly a comedy. It's like a superhero space comedy. And it's really good at being a superhero space comedy, but, you know, I'm kind of wanting some more character development right away. And so I was really worried that this was going to be the whole movie. And then it turned out it wasn't. And then things changed and then it got really good. And I really enjoyed the crap out of the film by the end of it. But again, not perfect. The other thing that I don't like, and this is going to be, this is spoilery. So skip ahead. Let's see. I can't tell what moment we're at. Skip ahead 2 minutes. All right. The other thing that got me, here's the spoiler part, is right at the end when we get to our final battle, we have the golden skinned, golden haired people of the, I can't remember the name of them, and they come in their remote controlled spaceships. So they have this whole fleet of little remote control drones attacking, and it is, once again, a Marvel movie has to end with thousands upon thousands of non-living creatures, drones, whatever they are, to come in and swarm the good guys so that we can now kill and destroy indiscriminately. That they're allowed to smash as much as they want because you're not killing any living stuff. All the pilots are way back on the home planet. It's no big deal. And the same way that they did that when they had to fight Ultron and they had all the robots. It's the same way they have. It's happened so many times that you have. Anyway, I didn't feel that they needed that. I thought that was an extra bit that didn't add a whole lot to the movie. And they were better off just sticking with the main plot, really. All right. But having said all that, still awesome movie. We all had a great time. We all laughed our asses off. We were all on the edges of our seats. There were moments where, more than one of my children cried. And so it was a good time, a really good time. And I like Guardians of the Galaxy and, you know, it still got me, heated up to go see more Marvel movies. So I'm not stopping now. Speaking of which, okay, this is the trailers I'm talking about. Holy crap, the trailers. All right, first trailer, Star Wars 8. Okay, it's Star Wars 8. Got it. I'm not, you know, whatever. It's Star Wars 8. Okay. I mean, I'm thrilled. I'm going to go see it. Trailer didn't do anything for me. Then, Thor Ragnarok. I know. God, I shouldn't watch it. Yeah. My son Eli is over there snickering under his breath because the trailer for Thor was so good. If you haven't seen it yet, go watch it. Oh man, I'm not normally a trailer guy, but when you're at a theater and you're captive, I mean, what am I going to do? Plug my ears and shut my eyes for the first 3 minutes before the movie started? I can't do that. All right, so Thor Ragnarok, it's beautiful. It's so beautiful. Look, the first Thor movie was all right because it was the introduction to Thor and there was some good stuff in it and Thor's all cool and stuff. But it wasn't a great movie. It wasn't the strongest of the Marvel movies. Thor 2, I heard so much weird stuff about Thor 2. I've never seen it. That's how much I love Thor 2. It? I never saw Thor 2.
We watched it in your room.
No, I never. Did we see Thor 2? Oh my God. Mike was wrong. Shit, I did see Thor 2. Oh God, and it was so, yeah, I liked it so little I blocked it out of my mind that's how much I didn't care for Thor 2.
Do you not remember Loki and...
Yeah, no, now that you say it, I remember Loki, damn it. Alright, I saw Thor 2. Alright, but, so I haven't been, I liked Thor 2 so little I've blocked it out of my head. So, that's how much I wasn't looking forward to another Thor movie until I saw Thor Ragnarok, the trailer. This thing kicks so much ass. It is awesome. It is Thor in space. It's Thor in Asgard, Thor in space, Thor crossing planes of existence. I don't know what he's doing, but it's awesome. And there's a Hulk. And, oh, it's Planet Hulk. It's Hulk in battle armor in the Colosseum. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Oh man. I hope the movie is as good as the trailer because that thing looks great. And then the other trailer we saw was Valerian, Valerian City of a Thousand Planets. And look, I saw the trailer for Valerian last summer, like the end of the summer. I might even have mentioned it on the podcast here. I saw the trailer for Valerian and I fell in love with it. Everything about it was just so perfect. I'm like, this is my kind of space opera. This is the space epic I'm looking for. Something about Valerian just trips all my triggers. I'm ready. And then I find out that, oh God, it's from Luc Besson. It's from the guy who gave me the Fifth Element, because the Fifth Element, it's in my top five. I love the Fifth Element so much. I know. It's old enough that there's some things are problematic, but for the most part, no. I love the Fifth Element. I think it's great. Even the cheesy parts, the parts people complain about, I love it. Okay. So, imagine the Fifth Element, but with a much larger budget and a much more involved space setting, all this interaction, all these races, people, things. It's, oh man, Valerian looks so good. And so now I get the new trailer, which gives us even more. And I cannot wait for Valerian. I am so happy about this. Again, man, if it could just be as good as I'm thinking it's going to be. And look, before I quit out of the science fiction double feature segment here, we're sitting in the theater and all of a sudden someone comes in a little bit late, but they come in and the woman has, like, she's holding this gigantic comforter blanket as she comes in and a pillow. I'm like, look at, I've never seen that in my life. And so I turn to my son, Aiden, who works in this theater. I'm like, dude, do people bring blankets to the theater a lot? He's like, oh my God, all the time. I'm like, what? And then Jacob, who is on the other side of Aiden, who also used to work at that theater, goes, oh yeah, dude, all the time. I'm like, that is such a good idea. I mean, I would never bring a blanket to the theater myself. I wouldn't do it, but I certainly understand why they do, because, you know, theaters can be kind of cold sometimes, which is what I like about them. But, man, what a good idea. I'd never thought of bringing a blanket to the movie theater. Maybe I'm the only one. Maybe I'm the only one who's never noticed this before. But yeah, apparently it happens a lot. So there you go. All right. Next up, hold on. Let me pause for a minute. I need a drink. And I'm back. Roku, he said without any segue. Roku is the box I used to watch all my streaming services on. But now, you know, since I've given up cable and I've given up everything else, I just watch everything streaming and I don't use Roku anymore, but I still like to say the word. So I just finished watching Iron Fist. And when I say I just finished watching Iron Fist, I mean, like, I was going to come out here and record and I thought, oh God, there's just one more episode left. I should really finish watching Iron Fist before I go out and record and then I can talk about it. So I did. And here's the thing. I heard a lot of complaints about Iron Fist before I started watching it. And so that's why I put it off until now. And I'm going to say that most of the complaints, were not justified. Really, it was, I mean, look, I get it. Daredevil's a blind dude and he's, you know, wow, lots of violence and I don't know. But then they did Jessica Jones, which is about, rape and sexual assault and being a survivor. They did Luke Cage, which is about race. I mean, not purely about, but there are lots of themes of these things in both of them, is what I'm saying. And so when you get to Iron Fist and you get to Danny Rand, well, it's problematic because Danny Rand is a really, really rich white dude, a billionaire white dude who traveled to the Himalayas. Well, crashed in the Himalayas. But anyway, he winds up being in Tibet and he gets to appropriate someone else's culture and become the ultimate warrior. Even though he's the only white guy there, he becomes the ultimate warrior because he's like the last samurai and he's like, you know, you understand the theme. And so he then steals someone else's culture and he comes back. And this is the complaint that people have is that he is a rich white dude appropriating someone else's culture and all he worries about is stupid rich white dude problems when he should be using his powers for a greater good. All right. I'm being a little bit dismissive about these complaints, so I'm not summing them up exactly the way other people would phrase their complaints, but that's how it sounds to me, is that I saw more than one review where people talked about him. Yeah, two. That's more than one, right? No, it's more than that even, but I just can't remember where I read them all, so. But complaining that there, again, it was shallow was their point. And, I would say that that's wrong. The thing is, and this is going to be spoilery about Iron Fist, so I don't know where to tell you to jump ahead for this one. Probably about 7 or 8 minutes, but we'll find out. That it's not about him being a rich white dude. I mean, that's part of it. He is a rich white dude. That's okay. And yes, this whole cultural appropriation thing is a little rough. Iron Fist was written in the 70s. Bruce Lee was big at the time. And so karate kung fu was really big in the United States in the 70s. I remember I was a kid in the 70s. Everyone wanted to be Bruce Lee. And so this was Marvel Comics' attempt to cash in on that by coming up with a white superhero that somehow had all the magic kung fu powers. And so, yes, that was a little bit racially insensitive to do at the time. Well, in the 70s, it was perfectly cool to do that. But nowadays we would look back and go, yeah, dude, you don't do that. That's no one today would intentionally write a white kung fu superhero who becomes the ultimate kung fu master after beating out all the Asians. That's not something you would do nowadays. But in the 70s, it was totally cool. And so, looking past that origin, you know, maybe Marvel could have done this differently. Marvel and Netflix could have done this differently. And they could have actually cast an Asian American to do this. So someone who is exactly the same guy. He's still Danny Rand. He's still the same dude. It just happens to be that he's Asian. Maybe even make him half Asian, you know? It doesn't even matter. Hell, Colleen Wing, I believe the actress playing her is half Asian. There's no reason you couldn't have given him some Asian heritage to make this a little bit less culturally insensitive. But leaving that aside, all right? They could have done that. I think they probably should have done that. But leaving that part aside, I think people just wanted to hate it because of that. I think that's really what they wanted, is people wanted to hate it because of that cultural insensitivity. And if you want to hate it for that, hate it for that. But that's not what people said. People then went on to then criticize the whole rest of the show because apparently watching it with that in mind colored it for them, because it's about Danny Rand coming back from, you know, this tragic ordeal. It's about his repressed guilt and his repressed anger and rage and the fact that every emotion he's ever had through all of this trauma, all of his emotion has been stuffed down and he's never been allowed to show any of it. And now finally things are starting to come out. And on top of that, you know, he disappeared when he was 10. So he's grown up his entire life, in heaven, essentially. And so therefore, emotionally, you can see where he's coming off as a child, where he has not grown fully emotionally because he's always been, or ever, because he's been told that emotions are something he needs to hide and keep down because the perfect weapon doesn't have emotions. And so this is about someone who is emotionally stunted, someone who is essentially a child just finally waking up and coming into the real world. And how does he deal with that? And his childlike naivete, realizing that, oh my God, I have this huge, multi-billion-dollar empire at my disposal and I can do good things with it. And trying to, you know, it talks about, you know, corporate greed and corporate manipulation and the ability that he has to try and turn this to some good. And I thought there were a lot of really interesting themes in it, and I enjoyed the show. It was like I think all of the others, except Luke Cage. Luke Cage I didn't have this problem with. But Daredevil and Jessica Jones I did. There were sections where it was a little drawn out. There were sections where it didn't, you know, I think they'd work better as 10 episode series instead of 13. I really do. But yeah, you know, this is what they chose to do. And so there were some parts where, yeah, we drew it out a little bit long, but for the most part, is great action, good coordination, great, you know, there was an interesting storyline, complex villains, real development of people. It was fun. I really enjoyed it. And I think, again, if you want to criticize it for being culturally insensitive, and, you know, in their defense, they're saying that, look, this is the classic comic book and we're sticking to it as, you know, as the character was written. This is the, yeah, you know, okay, whatever. They could have made it an Asian dude. Again, he could have been still Danny Rand, fully an American kid with all the same issues and all the same problems. He just could have happened to have been Asian at the same time and it wouldn't have changed a damn thing, but that's not how it worked out. And so therefore, so if you want to criticize them for that part of it, I agree with you. I think they should have done that. Okay, great. But the rest of it, that was actually really good. I enjoyed it. And I'm super looking forward to The Defenders. Oh, man. Because, you know, Claire Temple, Rosario Dawson as the nurse Claire, is, boy, I don't know if you guys heard that. Can you guys hear that? That's Eli. Eli all the way across the room. I don't know if you can hear it. Maybe I'll have to crank it up. He's gassy. That's what I'm saying. And he also can't hear me complaining about him. I was hoping to embarrass him. Oh, he can hear me. He's just ignoring me. Okay. Anyway, Claire, Rosario Dawson, the nurse character, is the one who's going to tie all of this together, because she's appeared a little bit in every single one of these. And so, I'm looking forward to see how Defenders comes together. I think it's going to be great. And I think poor Iron Fist has gotten an unfair rap here. So there's some problematic stuff, but, it's not as bad as the reviews made it out to be. It's really good. I enjoyed it. So there you go. What's up next? Oh, I think this is the last one in the meticulously applied portion of the podcast. It's the word of the week, which I haven't done in a long time. The word of the week is disheveled. Okay? Now, you know the word disheveled. Unkempt, messy. Usually you think of hair being disheveled. And so I'm listening to the Lexicon Valley. That's the podcast. And on Lexicon Valley, he's talking about words. That's what he always talks about. But anyway, it doesn't matter what the exact theme was this time. But he got to the word disheveled, and he said, hey, did you know it isn't disheveled? Or even, for that matter, if you wanted to take off the dis, it could be disheveled, I guess. He said, it's not disheveled. So I always thought it was, and turns out it's not. The original origin of the word is disheveled. So it's not a dis on there, it's a di. Like you would add on a DE for decapitated. All right. It's disheveled. And I don't know why that makes such a difference to me, but it's not disheveled. It's disheveled. Literally. So that sheveled meant, I can't even remember. It was something about hair. And so basically, or having, you know, styled hair or something. So you are now disheveled. So you're no longer styled. Your hair is messy. I'm like, oh, disheveled. I get it. You're unsheveled. And I thought that was interesting to me because for some reason, the idea that all along, I mean, it's still the same word with the same meaning, but I've just always assumed it was dis as the prefix, disheveled. And I just, to find out that it's not, that it's disheveled, except D is spelled D-I, it's disheveled instead of disheveled. I don't know why that threw me, but it was this profound moment of, oh my God, I've completely had this word wrong all this time. Still the same word, still the same meaning. I mean, dis and D are very similar as prefixes. I don't know why it shook me up, but it did. So I had to share it with you guys. So there you go. Hour and 15 minutes in, we finally get done with the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. You know what that means? Now it's time for the Pod-O-Matic. Hot dog. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. And I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And our one and only number this week is number 16. Number 16 is from my brother Kyle. No surprise there, because he owns, again, 39% of the list now, 38, something like that. So, what is the last thing you ate before answering this question? It was tater tot casserole, which is what we had for supper. Which, by the way, I made the tater tot casserole myself this time. And here's the deal. I've made tater tot casserole before. I know what I'm doing. In fact, I used to work in a house for the developmentally disabled. So a bunch of disabled adults all living together. And there were like 7 people that lived there. And then we had a bunch of staff members. And we do programs and training. And we also did the cooking for them. And so when you've got 7 clients that live there and potentially up to 5 staff at night, you know, you're cooking for 12 every night. It was a lot. And so you learn to cook big. And so, you know, now I have a family of, you know, me and my wife and 4 kids. And so it's not quite as big, but still. So I'm doing a double sized pan of tater tot casserole, and I get everything laid out. And then I get out my jumbo sized bag of tater tots, and I get them all lined up neatly. And as I'm picking up the pan and I'm just about to put it in the oven, and I realize, ah, crap, I left out the cheese layer. I left out the cheese layer. What is wrong with me? I can't. I'm like, you know what? We'll just do it without cheese. I'm like, no, we won't, because the cheese is so good.
Dad,
so wait,
the way you did this time, it's the best you've ever done.
Oh, and thank God I did pull it back out, because Eli is telling me this was the best tater tot casserole I've ever made. Which is quite a compliment, because he is very picky about his food.
Yeah, because so, the last one you made, it tasted like...
Yeah, you shut up. You shut up. Don't criticize my cooking.
Okay,
so anyway,
right,
so this was
about to swear.
This was the right way to make it, apparently. And so I went and I peeled all of the tater tots back off of it, bagged them back up. Okay, now let's lay out my cheese. Although, actually, before I did the cheese, for some reason... there's crispy onions. Up in my cupboard. I don't even know what we have the crispy onions there for. It's not something we usually keep around. I mean, it's usually something you only get around holidays when you're going to make green bean casserole or whatever. But for some reason, we have some now, and they've never even been opened. The package is still sealed. So I figured, okay, I've got all these off of here. Before I put the cheese on, went and popped out those crispy onions, and I crumbled them up, and I made a light layer of crispy onions, and then my cheese, and then my tater tots went back on, and it was really good. I think the onion, the crispy onions made a difference, but Eli says, best I've ever made. So, all right, cool. Yeah, that was the last thing I ate before answering this question. So there you go. I'm not going to ring it again, because we are way over time. So that is the end of the Pod-O-Matic. One question. I'm going to turn it over to GLaDOS, and she will give us a recap of this week's episode so far.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2017 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week is Weezer's in the Garage, Wonderful World by Sam Cooke, She Blinded Me with Science as performed by William Shatner, and Science Fiction Double Feature by Me First and the Gimme Gimmies. All the songs I use are available on iTunes. You check them out, you buy them, you enjoy them, because I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. Don't forget that this podcast is a proud member of the Nerd Pride Network, Angry Geeks versus Me Like Trivia, and of course, Nerd Pride Radio itself, quality nerd podcasting from quality nerd people. If you want to help out Nerd Pride Radio, then subscribe to this podcast. In fact, it was friendshipping. They said like, subscribe, review. There you go. I have a longer explanation here, but that's it. Like, subscribe, review. And if you want to be extra special nice, recommend it to your friends, because if you enjoy it, spread the word and let other people enjoy it. My bread and butter people. Remember, I am always looking for you listeners to do my work for me. Don't forget to send me questions and topics for the Pod-O-Matic. Watch out every week on the forums and on Facebook for listener betrayal. And if you have a really interesting nerd fact, or even a not so interesting nerd fact, I'm not picky, people, help me, about an upcoming episode number, send it to me and save me all of that grueling research. Or, seriously, if you're tired of Kyle dominating the Pod-O-Matic list, send me some extra Pod-O-Matics. I think we're down to like 200 now. So, we can always use some more. It would be nice. But anyway, my contact information, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on Twitter, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be completely honest, the very best way to talk to me is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. Sign up, send me a message. We will hang out together and become best friends in the world. You could use a new best friend, right? I'm here for you. We'll have fun. And now it is time for listener betrayal. Before I start recording every podcast, I go out to my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds and to Facebook, and I post up, hey guys, I am recording anything you want to add, post it there, and I will read them off at the end of the cast, which is what I'm doing right now. I go out to Facebook, and on Facebook I have 3 comments, and they're all from Sarah Beth. So let's see what she's got to say. Sarah Beth starts off with, recently I found out a celebrity I thought was much younger than me is essentially the same age as I am. He's actually exactly one day older, or one day younger. And another I thought was much older, who is also my age, although not nearly as exact. She's slightly younger. Hold on. It's a big comment, so I have to open it up and see more. I don't usually follow the personal lives of celebrities, so maybe I can blame it on that. The truth is, I just suck at guessing ages. From the boards, name some people who, when you found out their ages, surprised you. Wow. I've known everybody's ages for so long, it's hard for me to picture them as anything else. I guess, I've always assumed that I'm the oldest person on the boards. Not just Nerd Pride Radio, but, even before Nerd Pride Radio when we were Animal Ball, or before that when we came from Bulldrek, and that kind of stuff. I've known some of these people for so many years that, I've always been the oldest. Starting from Bulldrek, I was pretty much the oldest person on there for a long time. And it wasn't until later that I think Talvin is close to my age, I think. And then Zen, I think is a little older than me. Zen and Stan might be older than me. And that surprised me with Stan especially, that he was either my age or older, is because I had known him for quite a while. He was Nikephoros before he was Stan. And, that just was unexpected. So, usually young people, I pretty much spot as young. I always peg everybody as younger. So that one doesn't surprise me. When it turns out someone's, older, especially older than me, I'm like, wow, that is weird. And, to all of you guys, if you're not actually older than me, if I'm still the oldest person and I'm just saying you look old, I feel kind of bad about that now. So anyway, Sarah Beth then continues in the next one and says, as you know, I'm so sad that I can't come to Gen Con. Oh, I know. Tell me about it. That sucks. So we're down to seven of us now. Seven spoons. Anyway, what are some nerdy gaming things that I can do after the kids go to bed during Gen Con to make myself feel less sad? Besides watching Nelly's Nerdy Adventures, of course. Oh, yeah, but Nelly's Nerdy Adventures would be very bittersweet for you at the moment, wouldn't it? I mean, I know you're going to watch them anyway, but it'll be really sweet and fun and nice because you'll get to see all the awesome things that people are doing at the con, and then it'll also make you a little sad that you're not going to be there with them. A little good, a little bad. But I guess that's good. That's being human. But even at that, you know, look, There's games that you can play and stuff like that. I don't know if I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but yeah, you could work on whatever awesome kick-ass costume you're going to wear for next year's Gen Con, and you could start plotting that and drawing up sketches and maybe working on stuff ahead of time. But maybe that's a little too early. Maybe you could go back and pick up books, movies, that stuff that inspired you, really nerdy, wild fantasy sci-fi stuff, the things that really, whatever your fandom is, go rewatch some of the stuff that inspired you, and got you into the nerd culture to start with, and go back to those and revisit them. I think that's always really fun. Or for that matter, go watch some of the adventure classics that don't even wait for your kids to go to bed. Because there are adventure classics, nerdy kinds of stuff that you can watch with your kids. It's a lot of fun. I mean, I don't know. I assume Evangeline is all cool with Peter Pan, but I don't know about Des. But Peter Pan seems like a really good classic nerd style adventure. Honestly, Peter Pan is really, you look at Neverland, and it's so obviously what do little boys fantasize about when they're playing make believe. Back at the turn of the last century, and it was cowboys and Indians, and it was pirates, and it was, and there it is. And I've always imagined what an updated version of that would look like if it wasn't, if girls were allowed to be included and you could have a modern day Neverland that would, there'd probably be some zombies in portions of it, and you'd still have pirates, and probably the cowboys and Indians wouldn't show up so much. But you could, you'd have spacemen and there'd be all sorts of stuff. It'd be really cool. So anyway, I guess cowboys do still come up, don't they? So anyway, but find some really cool movies that you can watch with your kids. And I don't know what would be age appropriate for them, not be too scary, cause I always think of something like Willow, but then we went back and rewatched Willow. And while we had a good time doing it, It has some intense parts, doesn't it? It's not, I mean, I always forget that, you know, a movie that's appropriate for kids doesn't mean it's always appropriate for little kids. So, you know, you might want to consider that. But, or even just watch some cool Pixar adventures or some who knows what. But yeah, there's lots of things you could be doing. I hope we're going to miss you. It's going to be tough. But I say it's going to be tough. We're going to have a blast. And we'll think it. Don't laugh over there, Eli. Eli's mocking me. Yes, we're going to miss you, and it's going to be very sad that you're not there, but we will have a really good time anyway, and we'll try not to rub it in too much because that would be mean. So there you go. All right. Then the next one, again from Sarah Beth, says, last one, I promise, and settle a disagreement for me. Pete and I were talking on the way to get coffee, and he mentioned he made a joke on Twitter that got a good deal of positive response, but one woman told him the joke was backwards the way he wrote it. He gleefully told me that he had been woman-splained and was excited because equality, bro. Oh, yeah, I already see where this conversation is going, and I'm just going to let you know that I think Pete's wrong. But if you want the whole thing, let's go through it. All right. I gave him the side eye and said, I don't think that's what mansplaining means. And I went on to explain that the way I interpreted the term was a man explaining in a simplified and often condescending manner on a subject on which the other person, usually a woman, is already an expert or at least has greater knowledge on the subject. I used as an example I had heard where a man told a mother who was nursing her child that she was holding the baby wrong so that the baby wasn't getting any milk. Therefore, as Pete isn't a professional comedian, and we don't know the commenter's tone or intent, that it wasn't any kind of splaining in that sense. All right. My question to you is threefold. Am I right in my definition? Yes, you're absolutely right in my definition, in that mansplaining is a man presuming that he knows better than anyone else, usually a woman, and explaining to them when, in fact, there's no reason for him to believe that she wouldn't already know what this topic is about. I mean, literally, because we nerds are really bad about this, that we just assume that women can't possibly know anything about nerd culture, and so therefore we will gleefully explain to them the intricacies of Babylon 5 or whatever it is, and forgetting that you know, fandom is not just for one gender, and that it's very likely that they already know more than we do about it, but we'll still tell them anyway. Just to, you know, demonstrate our superiority, make ourselves feel good. All right. So yes, you are absolutely right in your definition. Two, was I just being defensive and oversensitive about a stranger on the internet being accused of this? Probably. And I mean, I say that knowing you, probably. But I mean, really, the more important thing is that she didn't do anything wrong. And you and I both know she didn't do anything wrong. And Pete, once he understands the definition that is more commonly held, it's not just mansplaining. It's not just a man explaining things to a woman. It's a man explaining things to a woman with an attitude that she doesn't already know this, even though she does. And there's no reason he should think that she doesn't, but he still thinks that anyway. All right. So he was just wrong in his definition. There's nothing to be defensive over. It was just Pete being a dumbass on a definition because he didn't know what it was. That's all it is. So, number three, did I sort of mansplain mansplaining to Pete? No, he already demonstrated ignorance of the topic, and therefore you gave him what you were pretty sure was the most correct answer. And then you get all defensive about it, which you don't need to be defensive because you were right. So therefore, don't do that. You're fine. You're fine. It was, look, Pete had the definition wrong, or he was using it incorrectly. And so therefore you set him right. And therefore it's all good now. See? Nothing to worry about. All right. And Pete, sorry to have to put you down, man, but you were wrong. All right. And then that's the end for Listener Betrayal out on my Facebook page. Let's head on into nerdprideradio.com/nerds. Uh-oh, this isn't looking good, people. There's nothing. Nothing. Which, again, you know, I've said this before. This is what happens when I record on Saturday night. It'll happen. I mean, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. You never know. Obviously, everyone has a social life except me. So there you go. Let me go ahead and shut this thing down because I would hate to be Hate to leave this open and have Kaz or somebody thinking that they can get in when they can't. So done. And we are all finished. All right. That is it for me. I actually really enjoyed this. I had so much to talk about this week and I got through it. So for those of you who are really, really fond of the Podomatic, I'm sorry I didn't get to do more of those, next time. All right. We'll come back next week. Maybe next week I'll do an all Podomatic episode just to make up for the lack this week. But this one felt good, didn't it? Man, I just need your approval. Please, please love me. All right. You guys are awesome. I love you guys. I will see you next week. Say goodnight, Eli.
Goodnight.
Say it louder, Eli.
Goodnight.
Say goodnight, R2. Till next week.